There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Hour number two, as we are live at the Phoenix Park Hotel in Washington for the Fair Hold Their Feet to the Fire event. And I was describing last hour what this is about. Then I said, why do that when I can have Ira Melman in from Fair, the media director, to tell us why we are here and the history of this event. This is super. This is my first year here, but this is really a big event.
Yeah, it is. It's become the biggest radio event of the year. You know, the genesis of this harks back to 2006, when there was a really bad immigration reform bill on the floor of Congress.
Right.
It was cooked up by then-President George W. Bush with the assistance of John McCain and Ted Kennedy. Essentially, it was a rerun of the failed 1986 immigration reform. You know, it's devised the same way. Everybody who's here gets amnesty, and then, you know, we promise later on,
right,
we'll get to the immigration force.
You do this stuff for us now, but then it'll
right
be good.
Yeah.
This time we'll follow through
right
with it, the Democrats
you know,
say, yeah.
You've seen Lucy holding the ball
yes
for Charlie Brown,
right,
promising she's not going to pull it away. We all
right
know how that's going to turn out. You know, fool us once, shame on you. Fool us twice, shame on us. And, you know, we decided that we needed to work around the political establishment and the mainstream media, which was all in favor of this. And so we staged this talk radio event where people could hear directly from, you know, a lot of policy experts that they wouldn't ordinarily hear from. And talk radio is a good way to get, you know, get past the New York Times and CNN.
Mm-hmm.
People get information from talk radio that's valuable to them. They don't get elsewhere. And, you know, what happened over 2006 and 2007 is that the American people said, we're not going to fall for this again. They crowded into town hall meetings that members of Congress had around the country, and they made it very clear that this was not something they were going to tolerate, and eventually the political establishment backed down. And so, you know, we did it once, and we said, wow, you know, this kind of works.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's do it again. You know, I don't think anybody expected we'd be doing it 13 years in a row, but here we are.
Yeah, you are. And I think about this. What was started back then, I have got to think, contributes to what has happened here with President Trump. President Trump dialed in on that. What you had talked about in 2006 and all the subsequent years, he dialed in on that in 2016.
Yeah. And, you know, whatever you might think of President Trump, he recognized that the American public wasn't being taken seriously. Whenever the American people stood up and said, you know, this isn't working, you know, we don't like what is happening with mass immigration, illegal immigration, they were told, you know, you're bad people or
mm-hmm
you're just not smart enough to understand that it's in your own best interest. And Trump came along in 2016 and said, no, you're not wrong. You're right. And, you know, you need to be listened to. And that was enough. You know, and he has, to the best of his ability, carried through on things that he could do on his own. Obviously, you need Congress to change laws, but the executive branch does have some flexibility in how it goes about carrying out existing laws, and he's tried to do that to the best of his ability. We'd love to get Congress to do something, but that,
yeah,
you know, that seems less likely now that six committees are going to be tied up on an investigation of leading up to the impeachment.
Well, you're saying that. I'm talking about this morning too. I said, you know, being here and having all this energy for holding their feet to the fire and talking about immigration reform, yeah, you have to compete with now what is going to be the top discussion for members of Congress. I mean, this impeachment thing could take the air out of this for a while.
It could. It's going to take the air out of everything. And, you know, the American people sent members of Congress here to do the job that the American people want them to do, which is do things like fix our immigration policy, deal with, you know, all sorts of things that the American people consider to be important in their daily lives. And that hasn't been happening. It's even less likely to be happening now. And it's one of the reasons why the polls tell us immigration is the top issue that is a concern to the American people. Right up there with it is government dysfunction. And the two are inextricably intertwined. We have a failed immigration policy because we have government dysfunction. The problems are evident to everybody. But partisanship and ideological viewpoints, strong ideological viewpoints, are preventing any kind of movement on this in a positive direction. And, that is what is leading to this kind of government dysfunction that is leading to all these other things that we're dealing with.
I think the prime example, so last hour I had Sheriff Jenkins on talking from a law enforcement perspective. And it's different in Alabama because we are not a sanctuary state, nor do we have sanctuary counties, nor do we have sanctuary cities. Even though some have talked about it. But hearing him talk about being a sheriff of Frederick County, Maryland, and enforcing laws and detainer and doing what is rule of law kind of stuff, and the county, Montgomery County, his bordering county, where they just don't do it, is, you're talking about dysfunction. You got two counties, both inside the United States, and one is just not following through with what the protocol is. It coming from Alabama and looking at this, it is mind-blowing.
Right, and there have been, 8 brutal crimes taking place in Montgomery County just within the past couple of months, committed by people who were protected by these sanctuary policies. You have these ideological politicians who are willing to sacrifice anything, including the safety of the community,
at a certain point, gives off whatever liberal ideology they have, and they worry about human beings that are being killed or hurt or
I'm
wrong.
Sure they do, but ultimately it is up to us, the voters. If you have county officials who are protecting criminal aliens rather than protecting the safety of the community, you have an opportunity to make some changes. And as long as we keep electing people who are prepared to make these sacrifices of our security and our interests, then I guess ultimately we're to blame.
Yeah, well, you're trying holding their feet to the fire here in Washington, but I guess that messaging is true at a state level. True. I mean, the fair's got to be interested in what happens state by state.
Yeah. In addition to this the dysfunction in Washington, you've got entire states that have decided that they're simply not going to comply with U.S. immigration law. They're not going to comply with requests from the Immigration and Customs Enforcement when they have a criminal in their custody who is wanted. And this is purely political. Law enforcement agencies routinely cooperate with requests from other law enforcement agencies.
Is how they do their law enforcement business.
Right. If the LAPD gets a call from a police department in Alabama because they've discovered that somebody in their custody is wanted in Alabama, LA would turn that person over in a heartbeat. It's purely political. They don't like immigration laws being enforced, and they are going to do everything they possibly can, including turning criminals back out onto the streets in order to thwart efforts to enforce our immigration laws.
Well, we appreciate you getting the information out. People want to learn more about what FAIR stands for, what you're doing. Where do they go?
They can go to our website, which is fairus.org. That's FAIRUS.org, fairus.org.
What an event. This is great. Thank you for having us out.
Thank you for being here.
All right, coming back, more of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. AO5's congressman, my favorite out-of-district congressman in the state of Alabama, Mo Brooks, is our guest, and he's on with us next right here on Midday Mobile. Y'all stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. We are live at the Phoenix Park Hotel in Washington for the FAIR Hold Their Feet to the Fire event and Radio Row here. And it's good to have Congressman Mo Brooks on with us, usually on the telephone, although you've been in our studio some, but now I came to your neighborhood up here in Washington. Thanks for being on.
Welcome to one of the most interesting places in the world.
What a week for me to be here. Holy cow. I didn't, when this all started unfolding yesterday, I said, and I'm here this week? Okay, this is going to be interesting. So,
never a dull moment.
Congressman Brooks, let's talk about it. You just put something on Twitter. I want folks to go and at Mo Brooks, right?
It's at Rep. Mo Brooks.
Okay, so check that out on Twitter. You can check out. I retweeted it. What did you roll out for people? What was just sent out?
This is what I said.
Okay.
Read attached transcript Ray, Ukraine investigating VP Biden and son for alleged corruption. Transcript is so pro-Trump, one must ask if info came from a pro-Trumper who knew the socialist Democrats and fake news media would bite off on this like a rabid dog. And by golly, they bit off on it. And if you look at the transcript, it is really good for President Trump and really bad for anyone who supports impeachment based solely on this information. Bottom line is this. A few years ago, Vice President Joe Biden's son was hired by Chinese and by Ukrainians and got millions of dollars for probably very little work for which he had very little, if any, experience.
Right.
Ukraine began an investigation of whether there's corruption involved in Biden's son getting so much money. Vice President Joe Biden then used the power of the White House to hold up a large sum of money, hundreds of millions, maybe a billion dollars,
yes,
until such time as Ukraine was forced to fire the investigator, the prosecutor, who was conducting the investigation of Joe Biden's son.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you get to this transcript, and the president is reminding the Ukrainian president about the need to clean up corruption. And if there's something to the alleged corruption involving the Vice President of the United States, we're talking about the White House and their intervention and Biden's son, well, then they ought to pursue it. You know what? I want a president who tries to clean up corruption either in the United States of America or by American citizens elsewhere, particularly when there is the possibility that that corruption extends all the way to the White House, which it did with Vice President Joe Biden. And he has publicly said that he intervened, and he's bragged about having intervened and caused the firing of the prosecutor who was investigating Joe Biden's son at the time.
Congressman Brooks, Adam Schiff earlier today calls it a shakedown. Says a mafia-like shakedown.
Oh, that's bunk. Well, here's what I want everybody to do, okay? Everybody who hears my voice, the transcript is public record. Read it. There are no threats. There are no coercions. There are no promises of any kind of quid pro quo.
It sounds like a statement of fact. A lot of the couple paragraphs that he seemed to glom onto were just, to me, factual. Like, hey, we support Ukraine. Wish the European partners would do more. And then Zeleny says, I wish they would,
please
too.
Please pursue corruption, including the corruption that Joe Biden stomped on.
Right.
And interfered with. When
statement
Joe
of
Biden
fact.
Was vice president of the United States.
I mean, these are statements of fact.
Absolutely. You've got videotape of Joe Biden bragging about how he was able to stop a Ukrainian investigation of his son while he was vice president of the United States, using American taxpayer dollars as the leverage to stop that investigation.
So where does this go? You talk about this bad for Biden, good for President Trump, neutral for President Trump, or
it's
negative
excellent
for
Donald Trump, because it's about like Russian collusion 2.0. It continues to expose the fake news media and the socialist Democrats for what they are. They are liars. They are dishonest. They wouldn't know the truth if it hit them in the face. And they are motivated by hatred of Donald Trump, support for open borders, support for socialism. And they will use any weapon, even false weapons, to try to achieve their socialist agenda.
When you're talking to fellow members, do any of the Democrats say, hey, listen, I'm with you, but this is happening, this is rolling, I wish it wasn't? I mean, is there anything, I mean, you don't have to name names, but are there some of them that are...
Absolutely, there are Democrats who think it's a travesty that Donald Trump is being considered for impeachment, but they are scared to death. They're scared to death of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and that socialist wing of the Democratic Party, and they're scared to death of their own voters. They are afraid that if they do what the Constitution requires, engage in a thoughtful deliberation about whether President Trump has engaged in a high crime or misdemeanor or treason or bribery, they're afraid that if they do the right thing and vote against impeachment, they will then lose their election in a Democrat primary.
Will there be, and that's the problem, they'll get primaried, because I would think it's some of these Democrats that won in these districts that voted for President Trump have to be really worried about being on record with what they say here.
Absolutely they are worried, and a bunch of them were rather foolish, and they jumped on board the impeachment train before the evidence came out, before the transcript is there. Now they're scrambling as best they can to distort it and slant it in the most unfavorable light possible for President Donald Trump. That's why I want the American citizens to read it. Don't rely on me. Don't rely on the filtration of the fake news media. Read it yourself.
No, it's great to have
it. Was some kind of quid pro quo. There wasn't.
No, it's refreshing to have it. I told you earlier when I sat down and read it, I felt like, first of all, I felt like I was kind of eavesdropping. I said, this is strange. I always wondered what would happen at that level of world leaders talking to each other. So it was with some interest there that I read it. But I didn't, unless I don't know how to read the English language, I didn't see it either.
It was a very casual, polite, friendly conversation between two world leaders who are trying to get to know each other. Keep in mind that the Ukrainian president had recently been elected and installed into office. And they were talking about whatever came to mind, again, just trying to get to know each other, should the need arise where they have to be able to very quickly engage in substantive discussions about a significant issue, for example, whether Russia is going to continue to invade Ukrainian territory and what's going to be done about it.
All right. I want to switch gears here and talk about a couple more things. Of course, I want to talk some immigration with you. But something I love about your politics is consistency. I've told you that every time. I like consistency. That makes me happy. And you and I got to talking about a vote that you have coming up on banking and a banking vote and marijuana money. And I thought this was fascinating. Talk about the vote.
Under federal law, marijuana is illegal. Under various states' law, they have decided to experiment with this drug, and we will see long-term whether that was a wise or unwise decision. The problem is, because federal law bans marijuana still, banks are not allowed to interact with businesses that sell marijuana.
They can't take that money in that, and put it in the vault.
That in turn means that these marijuana businesses in states where it is legal are essentially reduced to cash only, which subjects them to risk of violence and robberies and things of that nature because they're perceived to have a large amount of cash on hand. It also means that there might be a little bit of under-the-table hanky-panky where not all the taxes are paid on all the profits because there aren't good records. After all, that's often the case with cash transactions. And so there's legislation pending that would empower banks to deal with businesses that market marijuana when it is legal to market marijuana in those states that have chosen to do so. Now, I have reservations about the legalization of marijuana. The more I read about it, the more dangerous I perceive it to be. But to me, this is a state's rights issue.
And
if states want to do that, well, then by golly, we have to let them do that. And that means we have to let them do it regardless of whether we agree or disagree with the policies that they promulgate. And I believe in the 10th Amendment and states' rights. I believe that the best government is local government. It's a lot easier for a citizen, by way of example, to talk to a city councilman or a county commissioner or a chairman of a county commission or a mayor than it is a United States senator or a president of the United States or a United States congressman.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, easier to talk to your legislators and your statewide elected officials than it is to talk to the president of the United States, U.S. senator, and congressman. So as such, I believe local government is where you get your best government, your best decisions, and I want to implement the 10th Amendment as much as possible to push these decisions to local government. And so allowing local governments to decide whether marijuana ought to be legal or illegal, regardless of my personal belief on that subject matter, I defer to them to make that call.
Right. And
some states I think have made the right decision. Some states I think have made the wrong decision. But that's their purview, their right, and I shouldn't be butting federal government's nose in our state business.
I love it when you talk like that, Congressman. I love it. Because
there's a lot of people up here in Washington.
But, you know, I love it. I mean, states' rights and liberty. You're not, people will say, because they'll easily go, you're voting for marijuana. No. You're voting for liberty and states' rights.
That could be
something that you said personally you think might not be the right road that these states do this.
If you believe in the 10th Amendment states' rights, then you have to allow the local governments to make judgment calls, and they will be the ones held accountable with whether they're good or bad. Now, let me give an example of what I tell to people in Colorado. You know, they're often competing with us in Madison County and Redstone Arsenal up in the Tennessee Valley. We'll be talking about missiles or space or NASA or something like that. And I say, well, you know, it's really not fair that we have to compete with you guys, because in Colorado, you don't need rockets to get high.
Nice. And they, you know what, they probably appreciate that.
But they enjoy the humor.
That's for sure. Congressman, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. I know you've got lots more to going on. Votes tonight to come.
Certainly, Sean, at your disposal.
All right.
Let me know if you want me on again sometime to chat about some of these federal issues.
Well, I think we'll do it very, very soon. Congressman Mo Brooks, our guest. And go check him out on Twitter, at Rep. Mo Brooks, right?
That's it.
All right. Go check out this tweet.
Facebook address, but you'd have to ask my staff about that one.
Well, we'll do that during the break.
Much to their concern, I've just started tweeting.
Much to my delight, you've started tweeting. Y'all check that out. A lot to talk about. We're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Text line open at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. We are live from the Phoenix Park Hotel in Washington for Fairs Hold Their Feet to the Fire, the 13th year of this. And Dale Jackson has been here for, let's see, 12 of the years?
Seems like it. Maybe more than that.
Yeah.
Maybe all 13. I think I missed one year.
You missed one year?
Yeah, it's been a pretty good run. It's a lot of fun.
I tell you what, this is, I was talking to Ira earlier, this is very impressive. The number of people here and kind of the history of this from back in 06 to now. And it's like, wait a second, we're talking about the same subject. I don't know the discussion's changed that much.
Well, I don't know about that. I think the discussion's changed quite a bit.
How?
In 07, I mean, there were still, people were still spitting mad about the Gang of Eight deal.
Right.
So there's still a lot of, like, people were very upset about that.
And they're not upset now? I mean,
it's a different kind of upset.
Trump won, I would say, based on what had come up in 2006, that same anger of American people, it was part of what put President Trump in office.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But at that particular time, it was still kind of fresh. And then Barack Obama became president.
Mm-hmm.
And when Barack Obama became president, then it was like, hey, we're not going to do anything about immigration.
Which further stoked the conversation that we're still having now.
Yeah, there's a thread, but it's different. It's a different, because now there's a two-sided, two sides of the argument. One, mad at a bunch of Republicans because they had House, they had Senate, you know, and they were ready to go, and what'd they do with it? And the answer is nothing. So then they're mad about that now, and now we're back to having a Democratic-controlled Congress that, in this particular case, not only do they not want to do anything, they want to actively make it worse. And so the problem's gotten a lot worse. So maybe this thing is the problem.
Well,
ditto.
Yeah.
So wait a second. So fair is the cause of the problem, right? I get this.
Yeah.
Dale Jackson, of course, for the Dale Jackson Show on WVNN, and Congressman Mo Brooks is sticking around, which means I'm outnumbered. AL5 is outnumbering AL1 at this table. So
North Alabama takeover.
That's just fine. We got kinfolk in New Hope. And in Huntsville. So, you know, shout out to the families up there. So I want to talk about what is next here. Number one, it's going to be next for a while because we talked about it a second ago. What are the odds that you're going to be able to move some legislation, whether it goes anywhere, any discussion about immigration right now?
That relates to immigration?
Yeah.
I pray that no immigration legislation passes, because if it does, as Dale said, it will make our border security worse, not better.
Well, it's not going to make it through the Senate. I mean,
yeah, I hope that nothing passes, but we do.
But
have,
we'll even come up right now. What I'm saying is, we now on the
remnants of the Gang of Eight in the United States Senate. You've got Marco Rubio still there.
True.
You've got the principal architects of the Gang of Eight bill that would have opened up our borders considerably. That would have given bukus of amnesty to illegal aliens.
But they've been to voters. The voters put them in re-education camps. Like Senator Rubio, right? They've been through
Lindsey Graham.
They've been through.
I don't think so.
You don't think he's had re-education?
No.
Didn't he come around on the wall and
that's
all this other stuff?
It's like he's, whether it's
in
true
my judgment,
or not, there's been a re-education.
The only reason that Senator Lindsey Graham is taking a hard pro-Donald Trump position right now is because he's up for election in 2020. Once you get the election behind you, I think you'll see the Lindsey Graham of 2012 to 2016 resurface.
Wow, so I guess you won't be going to South Carolina to campaign for Lindsey Graham.
Absolutely not.
I guess we won't be seeing
He's not a conservative.
Okay.
Well, okay, in this discussion going forward, the short term is, I'm saying that I want to get into the impeachment discussion somewhat.
Otherwise, because I don't South Carolina. Maybe I can get a vote or two there.
you qualify for, I think
absentee,
you qualify.
I think you absentee there and then vote here. I think that's how you're supposed to do it.
All so right.
Don't
just,
do that, Congress.
Just build all the details here. But, I mean, I'm kind of getting that in a transition of nothing happening other than impeachment talk coming out of Dems in the House right now. I can't imagine. Or is that correct, Congressman?
They'll push their socialist agenda. They will push funding bills that will promote their overall agenda, socialism, deficit and debts.
And you're absolutely correct, you know, in saying socialism is part and partial to a lot
control.
Of people. How many of your fellow members of Congress, how many other House members, Democrat House members, do you think are truly socialist? Truly socialist.
A majority. Almost all the Democrats. I could not name a Democrat who is not a socialist. In the House of Representatives.
Not a single one.
Name one that opposed socialized medicine
Manchin.
With Obamacare.
Well, let's look at people in the House who
would be. I don't know of a single one that voted against socialized medicine with Obamacare.
Is that true definition of socialism?
Yes.
Okay.
What is the definition of socialism is the government operation of various aspects of the economy.
The means,
where the government
right.
is dictating to us in the private sector what we can and cannot do. That is exactly what Obamacare does, is it took over more and more of the private sector health care via government intervention and dictate. So it's the very essence of socialism. Now, is it 100% socialism? No. We don't yet have all of our doctors, nurses, and other medical technicians employed by the government. There are still some who are employed in the private sector.
Right.
So it's not a United Kingdom-style socialism, but that is exactly where every single House Democrat wants to
take
us,
as far as I'm aware. To you, they're on a socialism spectrum from the far end of socialism, you know, like Representative Cortez, somewhere there, to somebody who's a light level. I mean, but they're all socialists because the vote's on health.
There might be some that would still allow some part of free enterprise to work in America, but I don't know who they are.
They're that few in number.
Yeah,
and not
okay.
vocal.
Let me express it this way. Nancy Pelosi has a huge problem with the Democratic Conference. You know what that problem is? They think she's too conservative.
Right. The coming from California, that Nancy Pelosi is too conservative.
That is her problem with the Democrat Conference as it exists today. These are radical left wingers.
Let me just ask this. So you mentioned that all of them voted for Obamacare. And again, we're talking, that was what, 2010, whatever we're talking about? 2009.
It's 2010 in the January-February time frame, okay. And also in the fall, early winter of 2009.
And that's where they were. Now, they're like, that's not good enough.
Right.
And they're battling over how much they can push it further, how much $36 trillion of Medicare for all that stuff. That's the fight they're having now. So if that was the benchmark, they're far to the left of that now. Is that fair, Carl?
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And I think of it in a different context, too. When there's a fight between free enterprise, which is more liberty, more freedom, people making their own decisions, and government dictate, I cannot name a single vote a single Democrat has cast in favor of liberty and freedom and free enterprise when the choice is socialism and more government dictate.
Can I ask this
any of the bills that we've seen?
And the problem is, I think that infection crosses the aisle with some of your fellow Republicans.
There are some of our Republicans that are scared to death that if they aren't socialist enough, they'll lose their elections.
Right, because they see the votes, you know, votes I've seen, I'm going, that's not a free market. That's a, there's maybe Washington's version of the free market they're voting on, but it's not what we see back in Alabama, or at least the idea that I have in my head.
You know, that's a good point.
I mean, there's, so not only has the Democrat moved from that benchmark, that starting point that you talked about, Dale, but I think it's drug some Republicans with it.
Yeah, and I don't want to step too much on my good friend Dale Jackson's time, because he's kind of leaning back now that Mo Brooks has got near a microphone. But please, Dale, jump in.
I know about talking to you when there's a microphone around. I might as well just turn them all off. let me ask this question. You mentioned Joe Manchin.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking as you said that, you know, there's Doug Jones and there's Heidi Heitkamp and stuff like that. You look at them. Are they socialists? Is Doug Jones a socialist?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
He supports Obamacare.
You didn't miss a beat to yes. Doug Jones is socialist.
Now, he's not a communist, but
right,
he is
there's
a
difference. That Senator Jones believes in government controlling the means of operations in an economy.
Yeah, and look at all the money that the government takes from hardworking American families and gives out like Christmas presents to people who'd rather mooch off hardworking people for a living.
So him trying to own the label, like a Blue Dog label, you think they're dead?
Oh, they're
drug out back by Alexandria Ocasio's head, put two behind the ear. They're
Blue
done.
Dog Democrat label is nothing more than a marketing device to try to deceive the public about where Democrats truly are.
So
it's
a
marketing tool. That's it. Nothing more. There's no substance, no truth to it.
So the balance now is not between different versions of a free market economy or the amount of safety net. You're saying it's a battle against straight up socialism.
Absolutely.
You don't miss a beat on that.
No. And just by way of background for the audience, I do have a background in economics. I graduated with distinction in economics at Duke University, which is their highest honor in a major. And folks, I know the difference between free enterprise and socialism. Now, granted, there's a huge spectrum where pure free enterprise and capitalism on one side and pure socialism on the other. Whenever I see a Democrat voting, they are always marching us towards pure socialism. They just can't do it all at once right now. And I'll give you an example. In 2011, the first House floor speech I gave was on spending money. And I quipped on the House floor that, you know, one of the problems we have here in Washington is we're electing too many socialists. And boy, the Democrats, and it was the progressive Democrats, they went ballistic. They moved to strike my words from the record, okay, from the congressional record, because it was so insulting. Now they brag about the label.
Now they brand themselves what you had on record wanting to have.
They were that back then. They were just afraid that in terms of marketing or deceiving the public would not accept the socialist label. But Bernie Sanders almost beating Hillary Clinton made it socially acceptable for the Democrats to say what they really are, which is socialist.
Well, I guess it's good to have these moments of truth, whether they come on for socialism or when Beto says he's coming to get your guns. I mean, I guess it's
he means it.
The frankness.
When every Democrat running for president in one of the debates raises their hand and say, we're going to give all illegal aliens free health care. Mm-hmm. And what's the net effect of that, since we're at a fair border security?
Right.
The net effect of that is every sick person on the planet is now going to want to break across our southern border, because doing so means they get free health care that they might not get in their home country.
Yeah.
We don't have the money to pay for every sick person on the planet. Yet that is, in effect, the message of the Democrats when they all raise their hand to the whole world saying, we're going to pay for the health care of anybody who can break into our country.
It tells you something about the voters, though, that there would be no fear. It would actually be a motivation to do that. You're standing in front of those lights in a Democrat debate, and you do that because you know that's going to make money come into the till. People are going to send money to your campaign. That's going to be there's not going to be an ill effect. There's not somebody, and that it may go back to your central point of the socialism move, that there are not Democrats out there that say, okay, not that. That's too much.
Look, there's plenty of polling that establishes that a majority of Democrat voters prefer socialism over free enterprise. And that is why you're seeing Democrat candidates cater to the socialist position. They are following the voters.
You also got to remember this, and this is just my personal opinion. The media and their Democrats, I mean, and I've come to the conclusion that it's no longer Democrats control the media. The media controls the Democrats. I mean, that's where we are.
I like the solution of the media and their Democrats.
Yeah, and I mean, read my stuff at Yellowhammer. I use it a lot. So media and their Democrats, they're pushing them further and further and further to the left. And here's what they know. They know that they can say, I'll take your guns away and all this other stuff. Here's free health care for illegal aliens and everything like that. And then they know once they limp through that primary, they're going to have to try to unring that bell. And you know who's going to help them? Chuck Todd and Chris Matthews and all that. They're going to say, well, they don't really mean this. They were just saying that. Clearly that's not going to happen, and they're going to try to unring the bell. I have a question for you, Congressman. Did you know Beto O'Rourke before he became this guy that he is now? Did he ever tell you he wanted to take your guns away?
No.
This is like some crazy thing, like body snatcher thing. What happened to this guy?
He was on record saying he didn't want to.
No, I know. That's why I'm asking. He knew the guy.
Beto O'Rourke has always been a liberal left-wing Democrat, okay? Going back to when he was first elected to the House of Representatives. when we were in control of the House under John Boehner and then Paul Ryan, we did not allow those socialist bills, those let's seize everybody's guns bills, to come up for a vote. So he never had to face those kinds of votes. Now it's a different picture. And of course, when he's running for president of the United States, it's a different picture.
But it hasn't moved the needle for him at all. That's the thing that I find most amazing.
Well, it's because all of them are against the Second Amendment. So it's like, repeal okay, the Second
all right,
Amendment.
All right, that's fair.
Okay, there's no distinction between Beto O'Rourke and the others.
No,
all of them
to
want to give free health care to illegal aliens. All of them won't open borders. All of them support socialism. So they're really struggling with each other to try to stake out the furthest, most extreme left-wing position, because that's where they perceive the majority of Democrat voters.
My last question for you on Sean's show is this. Joe Biden, I think when he loses the primary, they will look to today and they will say, this is the moment Joe Biden was finished, because all this is doing, you're not going to take Trump out with this. We all know that. But Biden is just going to get destroyed on this regularly from now until this is all resolved. Is he done now?
I, before this came out, believed that Joe Biden was toast. Keep in mind where the Democrats are, and I'm going to use Alexandria Cortez as an example. She beat a 20-year incumbent white male Democrat, and she had three themes. Now, it used to be you do this kind of stuff behind the scenes in rumor mill. She came right out front with it, very bold about it. I'm a woman. He's a man. Vote for me because I'm a woman. Identity politics. I'm an Hispanic, he's a white. That's a racist theme, but vote for me because I'm Hispanic and he's a white guy. And then third, yes, he's a liberal, he's a progressive, but I'm a socialist. Vote for me. So that is basically a synopsis of where the Democratic Party's primary voters are today. And Joe Biden is just like Crowley. He's a white, mm-hmm. he's a male, he's lost on those two identity politics, one sexism, the other racism. And he's a liberal, but he's not a socialist. So you're seeing Joe Biden slowly but surely get whittled down, and he is a cooked goose.
That's for sure. We're coming back. More of Midday Mobile live from Fair's event here in Washington, holding their feet to the fire. Talking to Congressman Brooks, also Dale Jackson, our guest. I'd love to hear from you on the text line at 343-0106. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Back, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. We are live from Washington, wrapping it up for today here from the Phoenix Park Hotel. Although there's lots of stuff to go see. Dale Jackson's going to take me on his own personal tour of the highlights of Washington.
Yeah, we're going to hit this hotel bar.
It's good. Again, come back and do that again.
Oh, my wife's not listening.
Well, they had the thing. I got the card last night where they punch it every time you get a beer, and I think you get six, and then you get one free or something like that. It's good.
So you got your one free. No, six more tonight. You get another one. Okay.
Right. I'm doing that. I want to, a lot to talk about here, but I want to take a second. What we were talking about during the break, and that is the story Sean Ross put out yesterday at Yellow Hammer News. You've been discussing on your show. This is a big deal, getting the endorsement that Tuberville did yesterday.
Might be a fatal blow to Bradley Byrne. I mean, it very well could be. It's going to be a lot. It comes with a lot of money. It comes with a lot of prestige. And Yellowhammer's story, and I know you were reading it, 161 out of 163 won.
So tell people, once again, y'all listen to this. Out of the endorsed...
I went out of the candidates Alpha endorsed in the last election cycle, 161 out of 163 won. Now, I don't know.
How you like those odds?
Yeah, I don't know which two lost, but me and Jeff, Poor, were trying to rack our brain and figure this thing out.
Right.
So we couldn't, off the top of our head, think of who it was. So they endorsed Ainsworth in the Twinkle Ainsworth race, and that was a surprise.
So you wonder what came first, though. Is it the endorsement? And it could be different stories. Is it the endorsement first that makes the win, or is it the winner that gains the endorsement?
I think it's a little of both. I think if there's a clear cut that they want, and there's a close race, I think it's very possible that the way they would go about it is, okay, this guy's going to win, so let's just get
on board. Let's jump on board. Right.
So it's possible if you're seeing 33, and I've heard that Alpha sees numbers that are better than that. I've heard somebody say, I'm not going to say their name, but I heard somebody say he could win without a runoff, that kind of stuff. If Alpha's seeing that, then it makes no sense to go at that. But
the runoff thing seemed, for a lot of us, the runoff has seemed like it was a sure thing that there's going to be a runoff.
There's
going to be a runoff, almost to the point I think there have been strategies built based around a runoff.
Yep.
And those, if this polling that Alpha has shows it higher than the, even the internal polling numbers from Tuberville's campaign, this could be a no runoff territory.
That's crazy. I just don't believe it.
I don't know that I believe it either.
What we'll have to wait for is to see what Bradley Burton does next, and what his surrogates do, and what like some random group that pops up might start doing and talking about when it comes to Tommy Tuberville and things like that. That's really the question. Here's what I know. Bradley Byrne has like $3.5 million in his campaign. If you're not going to make the runoff, you better start spending it.
Yeah, that's right.
So get ready.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they're coming to Midday Mobile, and they start buying some ads. And Guerrilla Politics, they're going to buy some ads.
Yeah.
But they got the money, and they got to start spending it. And if their strategy is wait for the runoff, which...
If you don't think you're going to make the runoff, yeah.
You got to use the money, because what's the point?
Right. If you were so sure that it was going to be a runoff, yeah, the strategy is, hey, let's not spend a bunch, let's wait, and then we can pile it in the runoff. But if you're saving for a rainy day... And you don't even get to make it till tomorrow.
Yeah. You're saved for a rainy day, but you never get out of the house.
So yeah.
And here's the thing. He can still hold on to it around in 2022. But, I mean, better be ready to run against Mo Brooks and a Will Ainsworth. And,
yeah.
And, you know, depending on who's doing governor and whatever. And if he decides to run for governor, he can't use it. So
that's right. It can only be
federal races. Yeah. So it's really an interesting thing. I'm going to find out who those two people were that lost. And I'm going to call them up and be like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, why?
How did you lose with Alpha money and support? It makes no sense.
Maybe they died during the campaign. Maybe they actually were not alive when it was time to vote.
Yes, it's a very strange. Or maybe it was one of those races where they endorsed like three people.
Yeah, but y'all, once again, this stat, now it could be a spurious correlation, but the significant numbers, 161 out of 163.
Yeah, if it was 9 out of 10, then maybe, but it's 161 out of 163, and that right there, that number is well worth it, well worth taking a look at.
Unbelievable. We'll talk about this more coming up tomorrow morning as we continue our broadcast from here in Washington. Dale Jackson from WBNN, check his show out tomorrow morning. You're going to be doing it from... I'll be here.
We forgot to talk about the guy who tried to beat me up in the studio.
Tomorrow, can we talk about your fisticuffs?
We'll talk about that again.
Full contact radio.
80-year-old man.
You can't. It's just like a small person. You can't hit them. Right.
If you'd hit me, I would have.
Man has no shame. All right. We'll be back tomorrow. You'll have a great one. Feinbaum next.